One, two, three, four, just another day at my dead-end profession. I'm living day to day, yeah, listening to some good old country records on the radio. And yeah, what else can I say?
You're listening to the Degenerate Podcast. I'm Ryan Shores. With me, as always, is Mr. Dave Callens.
What's up?
And on the soundboard, Robert Timothy.
How you doing?
Very excited to have our guest today. We've been trying to get him on the show forever. This guy I've known as long as I've been doing comedy. He is the host of Tonight in San Diego and one of the funniest comics in San Diego. That's not my opinion. He was voted that in 2014. Mr. Jesse Egan, everybody.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What's up, man?
I'm so glad we finally got this working.
I know. The problem is that our podcast that Jeff and I do is like the same time and day as
Yeah.
So I've been trying to get you on and me on here, and we just couldn't do it. But today, ours is canceled, so.
Not permanently.
Forever?
No, just today. Just today.
Now, they ran out of topics.
Which Wade had to get sandwiches or something.
Now, for people living out of this city, Tonight in San Diego, which you're the host, you're the Johnny Carson of Tonight in San Diego.
Oh, that's nice.
That's, it's like the Tonight Show just for our city.
Yeah.
And why that's really cool is, if people don't realize this, there's no more local programming anymore. Yeah. Like, that's gone. And the reason for that is, are you guys familiar with the Telecommunications Act of 1996?
Obviously.
What that was is before 1996, this is just like a brief summary of it. You were only, if you were an entity, you were only allowed to own like one type of media thing in one city.
Okay.
So you couldn't just own all the TV stations and all the radio stations. That was a monopoly. So in 1996, they did away with that. They're like, you can own as much as you want. And like NBC was like, fucking cool.
Hence
and they,
Clear Channel now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Clear Channel owns every radio station and Billboard, by the way.
Yeah, give me everything. I just landed on Boardwalk. I'm fucking buying everything. And so what that did was, I think that actually did irreparable harm to our culture, because before that, do you remember tuning in to your local TV station at like midnight and it was like Gordon's Spooky Theater and there
was
some weirdo in a cape dancing around and you're like, fuck it, what is this?
Yeah.
But they still they still have like public access, right? So I guess that's the only
venue. I haven't seen it.
It's out there somewhere. It's just buried amongst all the other shit.
But it's not, what you're saying is that is limited now to those little specific narrow niches of media. It's
right.
Like public access is the only time you can get local stuff on.
Yeah, so there's like they did away with all that. So NBC came in and we're like, all right, I bought everything. Fire that fat little weirdo in the cape. He's gone. Take all those movies from the 50s he was showing. Put them in the garbage can or take them home. I don't care. You know, either one. You're all fired anyway. Have a little memento. I don't care. And then I'm going to show reruns of Murphy Brown at midnight.
Yeah.
Nothing against Murphy Brown. It's a fine show. But what that is kind of like, imagine having like a mom and pop like malt shop in your hometown, and it's not great, but it's kind of cool with the old fashioned soda counter. And all of a sudden, one day they're just tearing it down. Like, what are you doing? We're putting in a California Pizza Kitchen.
Yeah.
What? Why? Like, what do you have against California Pizza Kitchen? CPK, bro. Like, it's because it's not special. It's not ours, you know. And so that's one thing it did. And that so you don't see Tonight in San Diego, you know, all these places anymore.
Well, that kind of legislation is interesting too, because like, you have to imagine the guys that passed it put some sort of spin on it of why it's a good thing.
Yeah.
But it's so not. It's just for corporations to make more money.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be really curious to see what their argument for it was. Like,
I don't know.
Oh, this is really good because...
Well, I'm assuming what they'd say is, well, you're using tyrannical anti-monopoly laws in order to keep us from freely doing commerce, and therefore it's you know, against our own interests and whatnot. But... Here's what's interesting. So, Jesse, you guys have a weird path to getting there, right? Because Tonight started as a live show, didn't it? And then it moved to being on TV?
We're still trying to sell it. We're hoping, and I don't want to down what you said, but we're trying to make it Tonight in Walmart. If we could transition to that.
No wonder you got that happy face shirt on.
Yeah. So,
can I be the greeter just at the beginning of the show? Like,
yes.
Welcome.
It's fan base to tap into.
By the way, side note, how cheap is Walmart? They're like the richest corporation on earth, and they're like, well, we could pay somebody to draw a logo, or we could just steal the happy face because it's no longer copyrighted.
Yeah. But by the way, how great a show would that be tonight in Walmart? You could do a whole show based on the culture of Walmart.
I'm pretty sure every one of us as kids thought of the scenario of getting locked inside of like a Walmart department store, Home Depot type thing overnight. And then, you know.
But can you imagine like the zombies that come crawling out of
for
Walmart
sure.
ghouls that are still...
That's just when it's open, though.
You could actually run that talk show 24 hours and have like different themes. Like in the morning, there'd be a different type of crowd than in the evening.
Oh,
you just switch hosts. hosts out.
I'm just hoping to get a gig on Spooky Theater right after Tiger San Diego Raps. Jesse be like, all right, stick around for Ryan Shores on the Cape.
I know. That's like all the programming on, what was it, UHF?
Yeah, UHF. I missed that so much. That
great.
I miss it.
He had like the pet guy that would just like throw turtles and stick them to the ceiling.
Yeah, just fuck
turtles
it.
Turtles are nature's suction cup. And he throws them over. That's the show's.
You know, another thing that act did is it... you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Right.
And so now, because one corporation owns all these things, they have the ability to make shitty people into stars like instantly, because they're like, all right, well, it's one program director for the whole nation now, not per city. So now it's like, this crappy person, put their song on every station ever. Yeah. They can manufacture a hit so easily.
Absolutely.
You know?
Wow.
Look at morning radio stars. Look at a lot of morning radio stars, and you're like, man, this person is complete. I think they just replaced Cantorian Woods at some point with, like, the dude who won The Bachelor and some it was some ridiculous combination of non-talent
and some chick that blew the runner up.
Yeah, like it was insane. And you're like, these people have no radio experience. They have no comedy experience. They have nothing.
Well, you know, the program director there is the Cash Me Outside girl.
Well, that's the problem with it is it's becoming talent. Like this incestuous little tiny pool of people that are just getting the same gigs across different media platforms because like that talent director's like, oh, people know who this person is. Put them over here now.
Yeah. Right. And you can hear him struggling, too. I sometimes tune in just to hear him, like, tread water. Like, okay. So, woo. Hey,
how about red? That's a sweet color, huh?
morning drive time. Sweet. Oh, boy.
Although, on the upside, we are trying to get them to pick up the Degenerate Podcast.
Yeah, so.
We've made a pitch. They've roundly rejected us.
I listen to your podcast every time. Do you guys have, but I haven't noticed, do you have any sponsors? I don't have any.
From time to time, when they choose to, and when they say zero spike in business, they drop us immediately.
Do you listen to the other podcasts, and they're always like, it's always me undies. And I'm like, how the
Yeah. There's like
a Nature Box.
There's like three things.
Yeah, that's it. It's like the same shit over and over.
Well, it's like on radio, it used to be Ovation Hair Therapy. Yeah. Like every station, every DJ.
Yeah,
right.
That's weird. Hey,
or mattresses. It's always mattresses.
Yeah, no. It's always mattresses. Yeah.
They assume the people that listen to podcasts, they want the friggin' Nature Box, the geek.
That's right.
Give me the geek trunk. They just assume we're all,
you know. Oh, I love those boxes they just send out. Like, subscribe to this. We'll tell you what you like.
All podcast listeners are nerds sitting around that don't have underwear on.
Right.
Like, sell them me undies and more nerd boxes.
I like how if you guys are, I'm a longtime podcast listener, and so I watched the progression of ads, and it started with things that were kind of seedy. It was like Fleshlight was the only podcast advertiser for the longest
time.
They
also rejected us.
Yeah. That was like a Joe Rogan one.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it was a few other ones, and it was just like really old stuff like that. Yeah. And then it went through a phase where like guys like Corolla would be doing scams for Herbalife and stuff as they're advertising.
Yeah.
And now it has come full circle, and it's mainstream, and there's regular advertisers who are now advertising, not with us, but with other podcasts, they are advertising. It's funny to see that. Yeah. You're like, I've seen the evolution of this media to become a legitimate form of, like, at least advertising.
True. I just think it's funny that some of those products you don't see advertised anywhere else. Like, I would never know what modern Modal material is.
Yeah.
Unless I listen to fucking podcasts.
Yeah.
I mean, when do you ever hear about MeUndies Modal? What the fuck?
And
what
it's funny, it should be podcast specific. Like, they should be advertising headphones or like something like that.
Or at least
they're
the
not.
Theme of that particular podcast, maybe.
Yeah. One thing that's great about having a podcast, and Jesse, I implore you to use this tactic because you have one as well, is when we've talked about before how you have those friends that are they're always trying to sell you some shit, like maybe Herbalife or their jewelry they make or something on Etsy. Whenever they hit me up, it's usually around Christmas time. This would make a great gift. I'm always like, that is fantastic. How would you like to buy some advertising on my podcast? And they immediately are like, well, I don't know. I'm like, I thought you believed in your product. You just gave me this whole spiel about how invest in you, bro. And then all of a sudden the conversation's over.
Instead of removing yourself from tags, you're actually adding yourself to like those sunglass ads.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You can plug this on the Degenerate Podcast every week on iTunes.
Dude, the thing I hate the most is when they try to make the ads sound like natural conversation.
Oh, yeah.
That's obnoxious. Like me and Jesse be like in the middle of a conversation. You're like, you know, hey Jesse, by the way, my underwear is always bunching up, man. Is that a problem with you? And Jesse be like, oh, me undies, dude. It's great.
I wish I had some of that modern Modal.
And it's funny that you bring that up because the one another thing that act did create infomercials. They were there were no infomercials really before 1996. They created them. I forget the logistics of it. I mean, I guess there was longer commercials. Dave, you're a little bit older than I am, so like, you can tell me how things were in the 50s. But
I feel like Suzanne Summers was hawking the Thighmaster in the late 80s at some point.
Do you remember the first time you saw an infomercial and you didn't know what was going on? Like, I remember like the first time I ever saw one, I'm like, this fucking commercial's going on for a while here. I'm like, no, the thing is, I was like, I thought they just made like a hilarious faux pas and really ran the light on that 90 seconds. I'm like, this guy's still going. What an idiot.
Dude, I went
live
the other
commercials.
Way.
This is what happened.
I went the other way, dude. I thought it was a TV show. And I'm like, wow, this talk show is really like this Blender, man. You won't shut up about it. Jesus.
I did too. I watched the whole thing. I'm like, man, there's no commercials because it is a commercial. This is wild.
Here's one of these.
I watch them all the time.
Here's one of these things you would do if you were Elon Musk and you were super rich and you just had money to burn. Since you mentioned the live read thing, I would start sponsoring a bunch of podcasts to do live reads of embarrassing products. Like, hey, Dave, you know, my herpes is really flaring up again. What do you use?
Save that clip.
Yeah, that's one of
those.
That's
the top drop.
There you go.
Totally. Now, Jesse, going back to Tonight in San Diego. Now, don't be modest here. Mm. Are you seeing any local celebrity off that? Are you Mr. San Diego now? Do people recognize you?
Yeah, can you get a table at the Cheesecake Factory without waiting? You know,
yeah.
No, I don't think. I mean, you know.
When he drives across the Coronado Bridge, everybody moves out of the way.
I will say this. That Merrill from the show got me to throw out that pitch at the Padres game.
That's right. That was fantastic.
So far, I think that's been the big.
You hit the batter too. You took a base. It was amazing. He's like, I'm gonna brush this guy off a little.
I gave him the signal. No,
you had to give him a little chin music. He was crowding the plate, man. What other choice do you have?
Not going underhand with this one. So I think that was a big one because that's one of those bucket list things.
Oh,
I didn't realize even how big it was until. A lot of other people were like, man, how did you get that? And sort of, you know, were you like, you never expect that, you know? And so there was a lot of people like, that is awesome. So I was like, I got to take this.
Did they say it offensively by putting a lot of emphasis on you? How did you get that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There Jesse really like, turned around. I was like, man, it's such a hassle, too. I didn't want to do it.
I had to get up at noon. And No, but I mean, Merrill was the one that got that for me. She's an old, you know, really good friend of mine that has been with the show since the beginning. And to be fair, she could have got that for herself.
Wow.
But she got it for me. I mean,
that's great.
That's what a good friend she is. So I actually thanked her like on the show, like the script said, I want to thank the people of Tonight in San Diego. So I was like, I want the people of Tonight in San Diego and Merrill. I like had to throw
it
in.
I went off script.
But then you lost where you were in the teleprompter. You're like, all right.
Man.
Roll it back.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, I think local celebrity is the perfect level of celebrity, by the way. Like, you see with like, a lot of radio guys, like because local celebrity is like no one's digging into your history yet. I've never wanted to be a big celebrity because I'm like, I have done too many colorful things.
That's funny.
It would come out.
That's true. I never wanted to be famous at all. I just always wanted to be better at stand-up.
Yeah.
And stand-up, you know, as you guys know, it leads you down these paths. You don't know where it's going to lead you. And at some point, if you don't go to LA and just try to compete for all those commercial spots
and
all that stuff, then you're sort of stuck doing the same thing unless you find a different avenue. So it wasn't like my goal was like, I want to be a local TV talk show guy.
Yeah.
But once you start doing it, then you realize, well, there's a lot of cool things that come from this is a lot of cool muscles you can exercise. Like, I never knew how to do these headline jokes or sort of interview people or do live sketches and sort of get into the improv world. And so it at least lets you expand a little bit.
Yeah.
And also appreciate stand-up. Whenever I go back to stand-up, I'm like, this is so awesome.
Yeah.
And it feels easier because it's so much more.
There's not a whole bunch of cooks in the kitchen. It's one person who writes the material, performs the material. It is all up to you. It's the difference between a team sport and an individual sport. You can have fun doing both, but there's something really comforting about knowing I did the prep work. I'm ready to go. I've got it. There's no one else who can screw this up for me.
Yeah, and you also get a lot of that feeling of glory to yourself.
Right, yeah, that's true.
If it goes well, just like if it bombs, it's all on you. Yep. But if it goes well, you know, I really feel good for a week.
Now, if you bomb, it's the crowd. That crowd.
Well, you set yourself up.
People are morons.
You set yourself up pretty well, too, because in comedy now, if you're in San Diego in comedy, if you know one name, it's Jesse Egan. Because you have Comics Cock Talk Comedy, which is the podcast, which has been on for how many years now?
Oh, a couple years, a few years. I think we're over 100 episodes.
I think every comedian.
You predate us by a lot.
Yes.
I think comics listen to it. I don't know that other people. But,
that's the point. Like every comedian in San Diego, if it doesn't matter if you're an open micer or you've been doing it for 5 years, you walk in the door. If you know one comedian's name here, it's yours. And then you move that on to Tonight in San Diego. So now you have this big wider audience that can watch you that's more just kind of general local people.
Yeah.
So you have kind of set yourself up. You are now like the San Diego comedian. You've taken that spot.
I wonder if you get to a point, though, where they don't ask to book you anymore. Because that has started. I feel like the last 2 months, it's like, unless you really reach out a lot, maybe they're like, well, he's, you know, doing something else.
Yeah, so that's true. Oh, you got hot girl syndrome. Nobody's asking you to prom. You're a hot girl.
Well, yeah. How did that happen? I'm like,
we can't get Jesse Egan. He's not going to do our show.
He drinks in the woods. There's no way he's going to come do our show. He's too cool.
You got like $100 and some free pizza. not too cool. Yeah,
let me ask you this. Going to your podcast, Comics Talk Comedy.
Yeah.
It's every week you have a new, not necessarily new, but you know, a local guy on.
Jeff focuses on people that have done comedy less than 2 years. So
really?
The beginning of their sort of journey, he wants to see them and then like maybe later, years later, have them on again. But that, you know, initially he was booking people that would come and be performing here on the weekends or the store or wherever. And he would reach out to them. It was difficult. We'd had some cancellations. We had some people had to call in and do it. And so he decided, let's go the opposite route for a while and book newer comics that are like not jaded yet.
Right.
Fresh face and like remind you of why you love comedy. And they're coming in going, yeah, I did 47 mics last night.
Hashtag grind.
There was no one in the audience. And you're like, this is like, it reminds you of what you started doing.
But let me ask you this. How do you keep it fresh? Because the problem we had on this show is we would have a lot of, we'd reach into our pool of comics when we first started. And we found that when we have comedians on, they all want to have the same conversation. They all want to talk about bringer shows suck, open mics are hard, you know, like just the same three topics.
Yeah.
So unbeknownst to them, they were having the same interview as the last week. So for listeners, like I just heard all this like last week.
Right.
How do you avoid that? Because
I think there's a couple things. Number one, my attention span is very low. So, like I get bored really quickly and decide to just turn away and start having a side conversation with Jeff. And Jeff and I have been friends for so long that, you know, you can ask him. We've had several guests that were boring. We just started talking to
him. Nice.
That's great.
Like, fuck this guy.
Screw you guys.
And, you know, we give him a chance. But if they got nothing to say, like if they give you a one-word answer, you just, you know, we'll move on with our day.
Show must go on.
It's
drop a little Molly in the drink.
Yeah.
Like ours is four segments with commercial breaks. So the first segment is like he and I catching up on our week in comedy. We don't even really bring the guest until the end.
Yeah. Sure.
So they have three segments. And basically, I give them the first segment to see if they can make us laugh at all. And, and then after that, it's just we're having a conversation. And Jeff kind of drives the interview.
Yeah.
And it's fresh for me because I never know who he's going to book. He never tells me beforehand.
So. We got Gallagher.
Yeah. And if they're late, again, I don't know. We're starting the first segment. Right. They come running in with their coffee and sit down. I go, oh, it's that guy.
Right.
Sometimes I don't even know who it is.
I couldn't put the face with the name.
Yeah. I'm like, I think we're Facebook friends, but I don't know.
So here's something I've wondered when I've listened to this because I listen to Comics Talk Comedy, and I've listened before, and like you said, a lot of times it's newer people who don't have a lot of experience.
Yeah,
when they start waxing philosophical about their comic ethos, and they've done four open mics.
I mean, you don't get that much.
I don't know, but I've heard a few where I was like,
I've personally heard that.
I've heard them, and I was like,
Jesse just tunes it out.
Well, because I was thinking, like,
he just starts drinking
again. Talking to you and Jeff on his own, right?
Well,
a very
if I
accomplished
can learn
comic.
Something from them, then I'll absorb that. But if I feel like they're just talking out their ass, because you always get those few comics that have like done one mic. I met somebody at Twitter the other day, he'd perform once and he starts bragging to me. He goes, are you on the show? And I go, yeah, I'm on last. I got to do like 35, 40 minutes. That doesn't impress him at all. He goes, you know what? I'm opening up for Dat Fan next week. And then he goes, you ever done that before, bro? And I'm just like, can you just, you know.
Here's a coloring book.
Well, I want to be
Jesse's like, I've never had to do that before. Yeah.
I want to say like, okay, cool. Yeah. Like have a great set. That's all I said was have a great set. I don't, you know, I never want to say, well, I hope you're bringing the 12 people you need to bring. Yeah. You know, you know, like, I'm not going to, like, crush his dream and say, oh, good, right. You're a bringer. And what are you, 50? Like, shit, you waited a long time to start.
You crush his dreams on this show a week later.
Well, he's not going to listen. I don't know. Who
if you're if you're a listener, then you know that my favorite person is the new old guy. I just love that guy.
It's weird.
He's always weird. And we talked about recently this. I don't think the episode's even aired yet, but I was doing a show here at Madhouse, and like one such old guy new to comedy comes in. He sees the printed list. It was like, you know, like everyone with their time written next to it.
Yeah.
He comes in and he just writes his name on it and puts 25 minutes next to it.
Yes.
I was like, this guy.
Yes, that rules.
I feel like he read a life hack clip on BuzzFeed. And
it's on the list. You can't even do anything about it.
That fucking rules.
It's written in pen, bro. You can't change it.
Just listen to Tim Robbins or whatever. He's getting motivated and he's coming in. He's like,
do it.
25 minutes, no problem.
And it was great because it was double all of our time. He's like, what are these guys only doing 15 minutes for? Shame.
What would be amazing is if he actually thought that's how comedy clubs work.
Yeah.
No, he
just walk into any club in the country and just write your name on
it. He thinks it's like a vampire. A vampire can't get you unless you invite him into your house. He can't come in, right? Callen's, it's the same rule. If you can sneak up to the list and write your name on it, they have to let you in.
But then Callen's walks over and puts a little decimal point, so it's 2.5 minutes. Enjoy.
No, I'd put a colon in front. It's 25 seconds.
25 seconds.
Have fun with that.
So when you're doing that, when you're doing those interviews and you have these guys who are a little bit new and they get into it, do you ever just have a moment where you look at them and you're like, come on, bro?
I mean, internally, I do. I give a side.
You're too nice to do it externally.
I look over at Jeff and, you know, my eyes are rolling inside my head going, wow. But I don't think it happens as much as you would expect that they're like, because Jeff doesn't put people on that he really dislikes either. So if he thinks they're going to be.
No, like, I've been on.
As have I.
But yeah, I'm sure that happens. But in general, I think it's more often, at least from my experience, that they're still excited about comedy. Uh-huh. And so you get that perspective of like, you know, I'm doing all these mics and it's great.
See, the reason I think that would be fun to do is like, it's like watching a YouTube video where someone's about to eat shit. Like, I'd be listening to them so excited, like, oh, they're gonna fucking faceplant so hard.
Is when they haven't had a bad show yet. In
mind,
you know, when they, like, what's your worst show? And they go, I don't know, I've had a lot of good ones. I'm
that's
like
meeting a 16-year-old who's never had a breakup, and you're like, oh, I don't even know what to tell you. What's about to happen?
Right? No, I'm gonna marry this girl. Yeah. I went to prom with her. Like, oh, she's gonna blow lots of dudes.
And what's bad is it's usually that's the last question he asks. So it's at the end of the whole thing, and he goes, what's the best show you ever done? What's the worst show? And if they got no bad shows, I'm like, well, we should have asked this earlier. We would have known this person's insane.
You're like, I've done a show with you and it sucked.
Yeah.
So
what is conflicting is when you don't have to work the open mic circuit anymore, those new guys to the open mic circuit, they don't know who you are lots of times. You know, they don't know that like you're a local headliner or anything like that. So then when you show up to something like here at the Madhouse and there's an open micer that doesn't recognize you and thinks you're new, like I'm so conflicted because they're like, sometimes like some guys will be like, so you're going up tonight? Let me tell you something, man. Comedy's real hard, you know. Just don't take it badly if you do poorly. I have that conflicting thing where like I don't want to be like, don't you know who I am? But also I don't want to be talked down to by you know, a guy's been doing it 2 months. So
no, like, you should play that up so much. You should be like, oh, tell me more. This is my first mic. I'd really like to know. And just
Bobby
see the advice you can
blow
get.
Gun, just hits him in the neck with one.
I'm weird because I'll always be like, I'm scared. I'm scared to go, because like, I literally am nervous all the time. And like when I'm about to go up, I'm scared. So even whoever's saying that, I'm just like, oh yeah, I'm terrified. And they're like, you'll be all right, buddy. And I'm like, how many mics you done? He's like, this is my second.
You're like, hug me.
I've never had the confidence.
Can you come on stage with me?
You know,
just like stand back there in the corner.
Hype man.
Like brand new comics have more confidence than I've ever had. I don't know. Like,
but I think that's probably a part of the key to your success.
That's
like I've talked to people before. There are people who always hear laughter when they're on stage, even when there's no laughter there. And I feel like those people end up not doing so well. Because
a lot of times I feel like I've failed even if the crowd seems to like it, but I just wasn't right where
I didn't hit my beat. Yeah.
And I wanted to do some new stuff and I forgot to do it. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just disappointed with I was too shticky. Or, you know, I'll listen back to sets and the best ones I have is when my setup is like straight, like I'm talking to you regular like this. And then the punchline is character voice or wacky. And when I listen to back to ones where I'm like wacky the whole time, I'm like, what a dog shit comedian. You know, I'm like, I suck. I'm the
listen
worst.
Listen to this hack.
Yeah, I hate it. And so like that's why I can't listen to my own podcast either. Because
I ate shit doing warm-up for Tonight in San Diego the other night.
Oh, yeah, you were talking about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, because I'd never done warm-up for something like that before. It's like a whole different animal.
You did not eat shit.
Oh, well, thank you.
You got to put it in perspective. It's the first opening 5 minutes as they're still being seated.
Yeah.
In a venue where they're not expecting that, and right. you're standing on the floor, and they're up in the stands.
That was also weird.
And the ceiling is super high, and the acoustics are terrible, and the mic is not so great. I think there's a lot of factors.
The thing is, though, like I never like to give myself those excuses because right. that's a slippery slope to the all of a sudden you're that guy that's never had a bad set that was his fault. You know, the guy like,
but
oh,
after,
well,
you people. Know, that's true. But after I've seen like 80 people warm up the show and it's yeah. always like that.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah. That's good. I took a warm up spot on the show just because it's a great, you know, it's a good video. I'm yeah. thinking to myself, good video, good pictures. Yeah. And plus, it's good to practice clean 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I just say fuck a lot in general when I'm on stage. And so to try to be clean, I'm like, all right, let me practice.
Yeah,
this.
Your grandma's eulogy was rough.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, she deserved it.
But
no, so I did my set. It was the season premiere. I'm thinking to myself, I'll do the season premiere. It'll be big. It'll be a good crowd. It'll be hot. And I got there, way smaller crowd than I expected. And they were attentive. But they wouldn't laugh. They would just smile. Like, they would smile and then, like, and nod for the yeah. next. And I'm like, oh, shit.
You're so like, pan around and catch this. Pan yeah. around and catch these smiles.
Yeah. I had the same feeling. I'm like, dude, I just ate shit for 5 minutes.
Yeah. You know what I wanted to do? Like, I toyed with it. I wanted to almost do Hank Kingsley from the Larry Sanders Show. Like, all right, and that sign says applesauce. No, I'm kidding. That says applause.
That says applause. I know. It's like you need the house MC with the applause signs during the warm-up set.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
I'm going to bring my own applause sign next
time.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
You just walk out wearing it like like Flavor Flav's clock.
I'm setting on a t-shirt. That on other shows, like I bet they give them more than 5 minutes. They probably do a bunch of crowd work. They probably get comfortable with the crowd for a while. They might even be the house MC.
Yeah.
Like, I think Eddie Brill for Letterman probably did more than just 5 minutes up top. So,
well,
you know.
Ryan ran into a problem that I did not encounter, luckily, because I thought I did bad enough without this happening. But on your show, you guys do a lot of social media hashtags, post on Instagram, take some pictures, and all that stuff. And so, right before he went on, Bijan, one of the other guys on the show, he was just giving the audience those instructions, like, take a lot of pictures, post,
go
hashtag.
Go on your phone, make sure you tag the show, check into Spreckles, and all of a sudden, like, it went out. It was a sea of people on their phone doing that.
Which so is like, great. That's great that you guys
I'm
do
like,
that.
How's
the
everyone
same time
doing? Like, one guy looked up and immediately looked back down. I'm like,
Dave's like, how did I get the check drop spot at the top of this show?
Yeah, no shit, right?
I should tell a lot of screen-based jokes. Yeah. Jesse, I've always been curious.
No problem for me.
How did Comics Talk Comedy get started?
Jeff started it without me years ago.
That son of a bitch.
You know, he did a lot of interviews before I came on.
When I was on the show, it was before you were there.
Yeah, yeah. So Jeff started it and started interviewing comics, and then he brought me on later.
And what was the impetus? What was that pre-existing?
He was his day job was at a radio station, and he was trying to fill time, so he would just invite people in. And I think he's on the clock probably and would just start interviewing people on those mics. And
what was your pre-existing relationship with him? Just fellow comics doing shows, or did you just have a friendship
like
or
a
what?
Condition, like a medical condition.
Yeah, right? That's what I was thinking.
Your pre-existing.
Ask your doctor if you're suffering from Jeff Bilodeau.
How long have you been afflicted with Bilodeau?
Jeff and I had diarrhea together.
Hey, my underwear bunches up. How does Jeff feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, we were friends a long time. We started doing comedy. I mean, he came on to Winston's. I started Winston's comedy years and years ago. Like 2006. And a few years later, he came on and he took over for Bob Hansen as like the booker guy. Mm. And I think we just started from there. We went on a little East Coast tour together with Dewey and Lauren. So,
oh, I remember that. Yeah,
we were friends, you know.
You guys are very like opposite personalities. And I think maybe that is why that show seems to work. Like, you are very kind of like positive and happy. Jeff is kind of salty. Like, he's got that grit to him, you know?
I was wondering how you're going to phrase it. I was like, how is he going to say this nicely?
Well, here's the thing.
We're like sweet and sour chicken.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. You're the odd couple. Well, here's the thing. Here's what you both have. You guys are both good comedians. You're both funny. And that is what you need in comedy. So the personality styles can conflict as much as it doesn't matter at that point.
We have similar approach to comedy in that we like silly stuff. We're not really filthy comics. We've never, I mean, when we first started, we were.
Oh, everyone is because you're grasping at straws for material.
I look at my old stuff and I'm like, holy crap, that's dirty as hell, you know. But both of us have more of a silly approach and And not super dirty or edgy necessarily, but I think that's the bond right there, is that we appreciate the same sort of kind of comedy.
Let me ask you something about Tonight in San Diego, because you have writers for that. Yeah. Now, and
we have two. There's Bajan and myself right now.
Oh, really?
Well,
I thought you had a bigger team.
We did, but man, you should have seen our writers meeting on Thursday. There was none. We brought in my friend Nikki and her sister Ginger, neither of which are comedians. We brought in Sarah Lee Steiner, who's, you know, a newer comic,
yeah,
who wasn't there. And, and you know, we used to have, like, Matt Blagg and a few other comics, and they're all...
Jamie Gamlin.
A few of them will, like, email in, but right now, you know, we need writers. So, we're in a tight spot. But you know, we have Merrill, my friend Merrill, who wrote the banter this week, and I have to sit down today and tomorrow and pretty much do headlines.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
So. Wow.
Now, where did that get started? How did that get started? How did you get involved so early?
I got started as I just came to watch Lauren O'Brien as a guest host on a show and support her. As a friend of mine, and Merrill and I went to go see her, and then I started sort of writing for the show. I came on as a guest. Mm-hmm. I was a comic on the show. And I was like you. I thought it was really uncomfortable. Yeah. I mean, it was in the old studio, and it was bizarre. All these people in folding chairs staring at me, not laughing.
Yeah.
And I thought I bombed for 5 minutes, and then I can't.
Then they offer you the show.
I can't remember the interview.
Pretty good.
Yeah. But, and so I just came on as a guest, then I started writing for it, and then I was the co-host for a bit.
And then he Tanya Harding to the actual host and slid right in.
And who was the host before?
Jeff Kraft was the host before me. But we had a whole season where.
What happened to him?
There was a previous host named David Vaughn.
We don't want to talk about that.
And David Vaughn left the show, and then they had a season where they had guest hosts.
Okay.
So Dallas hosted one, gotcha. Lauren O'Brien hosted one, I hosted one. They had several. And on the strength of that, and Jeff Kraft hosted one, on the strength of that, they cast him to be the host, and they created a co-host position. So they had never had this kind of Ed McMahon co-host thing, so they created that. And so I started as the co-host.
You're the only person to go from Andy Richter to Conan.
Yeah.
I guess so, yeah. Basically, what happened was after Jeff left, they did another series of auditions.
Hmm.
And they were auditioning people I knew, like Knowles and Dallas. And mm-hmm. I was irritated because I was like, why can't I get a shot at those? They wouldn't even let me audition. You
really?
Know? Yeah, the producer had said, we like you as a co-host, you know, because I would stand over there. And like,
yes.
Well, I would write the jokes, and then when he would deliver one, and like it might drop or something, I would try to save it with an ad lib.
Yeah.
And they kept going like, "Oh, we love what you're doing over there," and I'm like, "This is freaking hard.
You mean doing everything?"
I
painted yourself into a corner.
I wanted to quit actually, and then once they let me audition, they said it went really well, the audition, so they let me be the host.
That's great.
I think some of that was cutting my hair, if you guys remember.
Yeah.
Long, greasy ponytail. And when I sat down with the producer to sort of really request to have an audition, I had cut my hair right before that meeting.
Nice, power move.
I think he looked at me and he goes, oh, look at friggin', you know, look at the E! Hollywood look.
Yeah.
You know? Let's give this a shot. So I think that made a difference.
That was actually the interview. Jesse sat down in a chair with some scissors, reached back, cut the ponytail off, and then set it on the table.
And you're hired.
I lit it, you know.
Like he's a Dothraki that was defeated in battle.
That's right.
There you go.
That's the worst reference. Yeah. I hate you for that.
So I wanted to tell this story because I'm getting married next Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
though if you are listening to this, you have gotten married 3 weeks ago.
I've been married 3 weeks ago. Yeah. So, anyways, I was tasked with doing the seating chart for my wedding, and I just thought like piece of cake. I'll just put 10 people at each table, and that's fine. But doing the seating chart for my wedding is like going on a little journey through all my friends' past drama because now I can't seat certain people at certain seats. Because I started out like, I want to make sure everyone knows everyone. I don't want to do that bullshit thing that's done to me at weddings where it's like, we put you with people you've never met before so you can meet new people. I'm like, that's just awkward eating my peas.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no. We got one table for the college friends, one for the comedians. That's also the undesirables table, and everyone knows
it's
family.
A degenerates table.
Yeah, degenerates table. I have a freak table. Bobby, you're at it.
I will be king of the freak table. Bring it, Mikey Gordon.
You better bring your bat lift, man. Someone's going to challenge you for that.
So many pranks going on at that table.
There's going to be so many pranks.
Also, I hear an explosion, and I hear king of pranks. You're like, stop it.
So the bride sits down. There's a whoopee cushion. It's the king of pranks.
A whoopee cushion filled with propane with a match nearby.
He goes flying into my Aunt Joan. So anyways, like, yeah, I was going through it. I'm like, and I, like, this would happen at every table. I'd be like, all right. Oh my God. I invited exactly 10 college friends and it's 10 per table. That table's done. Mm. Oh, wait. Mike fucked Rick's girlfriend back in college. And I even was like, I was like calling people. I'm like, that situation did happen. I called the guy in question. I'm like, hey, do you mind if I sit you at Mike's table? He's like, don't you put me anywhere near that son of a bitch. Sit me anywhere else. I'm like, fine. You're at the low-level comics table, all right? The low-level comics. You're going to be next to a fucking prop comic because you made trouble for me in the ventriloquist.
Dude, it's like playing Tetris of personalities. Like, yeah. Okay, this all fits. Oh, shit, I fucked up.
Yeah. Side note, somebody's listening to this right now, and again, this is going to be airing after the wedding, yeah. And they're like, wait a second, I was at a table with comics, but they weren't the I'm a low-level comic!
But Ryan, that's why people say that when you're at a wedding. Like, we put you at a table so you can meet. They just gave up.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just their excuse. It was too hard to put you somewhere, so they just said that.
First of all, I take pride in the tables I get sat at weddings because I usually end up getting sat at the fun table. Like, there's usually I'm like, okay, I've been assumed to be with these people for whatever reason. Awesome. My favorite is when Damian...
Bobby just thinks it's the fun table.
Oh, we make it the fun table. My favorite is when Damian Mercado got married, and he had this big wedding. It was this big, huge event. He was marrying this woman who had some money, and it was a thing, and they had the different sides. Yeah. And he had his side with his good buddies, and we were one table. A bunch of stuff happened during the reception, including one of our good buddies coming up shithouse to give a speech, nice. Which started with... Hey, listen, guys, I know a lot of you think I'm on a downward spiral, but... And it got worse! It got worse!
That's a downward spiral of a speech.
He told a rambling story about when we were all 12 and Damien kicked somebody in the balls on a dock. Like, it was just the most ridiculous story. His entire table of friends, myself included, are laughing like hyenas, uncontrollably laughing. Meanwhile, the rest of this 300-seat auditorium is dead silent.
Mortified.
It is fantastic. I hope that is the way it is at your wedding, yeah. Ryan.
Do you ever realize you're sat at the loser's table? that happened to me at Rob's wedding just not too long ago. Me and Aaron sat down, and long story short, turns out the guy next to me lives in a dumpster. I'm sorry. It's a repurposed storage bin. He was really excited about it. Like, yeah, I live in the woods in a dumpster. I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm at the loser's table.
At this table.
Yeah, the next person next to me, they're like, I don't even have a house. I'm like, God damn it, Rob.
I like how he got sat next to Oscar the Grouch.
He was a really nice guy. He just didn't have a little flexibility of schedule, let's call it.
How did he get the invite?
By owl.
Someone threw it out. He goes,
Yeah, yeah, and he just claimed it. Like, all right, open seat.
He's like, and I'll take the chicken.
I'm the king of trash.
I'm the king of bins.
But that single drunk table is usually the most fun table.
It is. You
know? It's just like a couple chicks and a bunch of dudes that are all just getting
drunk. See, at Ryan's wedding, they're all going to be drunk tables.
Yeah.
So we're going to have
to
vie for leadership.
You know what? I never understood the myth that weddings are a good place to meet chicks, because I went solo to a bunch with that in mind.
Yeah.
Everyone's paired up. Like, yeah. Everyone brings a date. Once was it a good time for me to, like, I swung and missed every time.
I've seen a lot of weddings where it is a good place to be. You're right. You do have to have that demographic. I think it depends when people are getting married. When you're younger, there's a lot more people who are in general single that will then be coming to your wedding.
Yeah, but they still take a date.
Sometimes
it's awkward to walk up to a girl who's with a guy who's clearly she's with and be like, hey, so are you together, or what's the situation here?
I'm guessing you're not big on the dancing part during the evening afterwards.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture Shore's headbanging to the duck celebrate dance. Good times come on, and he's out there like,
moshing, just knocking people over.
Good time, come on. You know, so I think that's part of it. You got to do the dancing.
Well, some of it is, I think there's, everybody's dolled up, they're looking their best.
Yeah.
You can go see if there is somebody.
I've got my good sleeveless suit.
Yeah. If somebody happens to be single and you go up to them, especially if it's a woman and she happens to be single, the implication is, well, you don't want to be one of those old hags who are just a cat lady at 45. You better start getting to dating
ladies. You don't open with that, do you? Oh, my God.
And that's why I'm happily married.
He opens and closes with that. That's all it takes.
That's how his wedding
He just drops trowel and goes, me or nobody, bitch.
Yeah. To be fair, that is my closer. My opener is, I know you thought I've been in a downward spiral these past couple years.
Oh, God.
No, the worst one, worst speech I saw was at Brian Bartel's wedding. You remember him.
Yeah.
The maid of honor got up. And this is why we have planned at my wedding to do the speeches at the beginning of dinner while everyone's getting their food. No one's shithoused yet. Nice. Everyone like does it like towards the end. It's a ridiculously bad idea. But she goes up and she's like, all right. It's no secret I don't like Brian very much. Everyone just went, oh!
You could have made it a secret.
Oh, my God.
You literally broke the secret
It's not a secret anymore.
I'm like, I didn't even know you. This is great. And like Bobby said, it got worse from there. And I was at the comedian's table, so we're all like grabbing each other going, give her the light! Give her the light! Cut the mic, for Christ's sake!
Dude, that's hilarious.
Have you guys ever performed at a wedding?
I'm going to Orion's. He doesn't know yet.
No, you're not. Oh, there will be no one doing a
set. Start doing shtick.
Yeah, not good stuff.
What's the deal with weddings?
A lot of where you're from stuff.
I don't think... Do people have wedding comedians?
Yeah.
Really?
Have you done it?
Yeah, I did it.
Really?
How did that go?
I not only have I done stand-up at a wedding, but I did
You also threw the first pitch out at a wedding.
I hit the bitch. No, I did the officiating of the wedding. Not the actual marriage, but like the emceeing of it for Lauren O'Brien's wedding. And it's very stressful, man. Those people are taking shit seriously.
One of those. If they do it right.
Cracks on her like military dad, and the guy's looking at me like, I'm going to assassinate you.
We have snipers trained on you right now. Yeah. I give the signal, you're done.
They don't seem
done.
Like a loose crowd.
No. And the other one was Mike Vinn, Jason Lawhead, and I did stand-up together at an like all-Filipino wedding.
Oh, really?
It was like a huge wedding. And
what's the deal with lumpia?
Yeah.
It was so funny because it was supposed to be outside, but it rained, so they moved everybody into this tent, and they were just staring at us like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah, that's kind of weird for a wedding. It was especially really a Filipino wedding, which I'm going to guess is a Catholic wedding.
Yeah.
They don't
usually...
She was
marrying a Marine. Yeah. Tell me that was probably the issue.
They don't usually do stand-up comedy at traditional Catholic weddings.
Yeah, and I think Mike Vinn did his Asian... sushi. Of course. I can't remember, but I just remember it was really uncomfortable.
Oh.
But yeah, that's a weird time. That is a weird time.
Yeah. Another story I wanted to tell before we get out of here is I was telling this at dinner. Dave and I were out with some friends at dinner the other night. I told this, and I realized I'd never told it on the air, I don't think. Is, have I ever told you about when I got kicked out of the Tolerance Museum when I was in
such
high school?
That's a great story.
Do you
that's
know
just
the
a
tolerance
great statement.
Yeah.
I mean, even without the story, it's a great statement.
Do you know what the Tolerance Museum is?
We'll take anybody except him.
Well, okay, here's
as you're getting pulled out, you're like, who's intolerant now?
I basically did.
First, they came for our shores.
So, do you know what the Tolerance Museum is?
Sure,
right?
Of course. If you lived in Southern California growing up, you had to go on a field trip to it.
And that's why what
I did
ended
not.
Me
I didn't live
it's okay, you were in Detroit.
It's a Holocaust remembrance museum.
Oh. Yeah, it's like a science museum, but instead of like cool little things like this is a gyroscope to show how inertia works, it's like, this is a black guy getting hosed down in the 60s. I'm like,
oh my God.
Now, and the thing is, here's the main part about it. Now, part of this story is me being a shitty little ninth grader, but part of it is also I could always smell some bullshit. And part of the Tolerance Museum is rich.
Oh, this is going to get into Holocaust denial, isn't it?
Oh, no.
It's rich old women coming out and telling a bunch of ninth graders they caused the Holocaust. It is a white guilt extravaganza. Yeah. And so, like, seriously, like, they're like, this is one part of the fucking thing. They're like, so, no, you guys probably don't realize this, but everyone here is racist.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yep. And I'm like, what? And like,
How old are you guys?
We're in ninth grade. Oh, and like, God. Everyone here has prejudice and you don't realize it. And at one point she points to this, Morty, who is black, and Brian, who is white. It's like, you don't realize this, but he secretly does not like you for certain reasons. And I'm like, what the fuck? They're just informing us all we're racist the whole time. I'm like,
fantastic.
What the fuck is this? So, like, the whole time I am doing that, like, little kid thing where I'm goofing around. around.
I think they're in the wrong museum. Like,
yeah, what's that?
I think they're in the wrong museum.
Right, right. So, they're already getting annoyed with me. And at one point, they bring us in this seminar where this guy, Dr. So-and-so, he's got like a PhD in not being racist or something.
And a crazy hat.
I don't know. He comes out. He's like, all right, now let me teach you how to not be racist or something. And like at one point, like I raised my hand. And he's like, yes. I'm like, is this the best job you could get? And so they made me sit outside for the duration of that. And then I'm like, what are you, a doctorate? And so at the very end, I'm not making this up. If you go to the Thomas Museum, it's probably still there. You're going to think I'm making it up, but I'm not. There's two doors. One has racist.
The building.
One has racist written on it.
Right.
One has not racist written on it. And you try and leave, and not racist is locked. So you have to go through racist door. So anyway, I'm like,
and they have a camera to take a picture of you, like at the amusement park going down the hill on the roller coaster. Yeah. Everyone gets a picture of themselves going through the racist door.
That picture just has Ryan throwing his shoulder into the not racist door over and over again.
Well, what happened was,
I'm sure those weren't just the bathroom. Someone's taking a shit in the not racist.
Instead of men and women.
I'm not racist, but I do have to shit.
So anyways, I'm like, if we get to the door, it's like, oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me. You have to go through the I'm a racist door. I'm like, this is fucking retarded. And I go through, and I realize when I go through that I can see the other side of the not racist door, and it's a push bar. I'm like, oh, I gotta do this. And as everyone's going through the I'm a racist door, I come busting out of the not racist door. I'm like, I did it. I'm the only not racist one. Look at all you. Shame. Shame. And this only like Martha Stewart, like collars me and starts dragging me out of the Tolerance Museum.
We should have popped back through the not racist door because she couldn't open it from her side.
Yeah. I was like that scene in Face Off where Nicolas Cage is getting dragged up by the prison guards and like cheering for himself. I'm like, you have a zero tolerance policy here. I'm not racist. I did it. And they dragged me out of there.
The only thing that would have been better is if you would have finagled one of your friends to help you out with this, where you walk up to both doors in view of everybody, look at both and go, and then try the not racist door. Meanwhile, he's on the other side, slightly pushes it, and so you open it, and you're like the kid from Sword in the Stone. Like, you're the only one who can open the not racist door.
I think it'd be funny if that museum had a section on lactose. It's like, here's the Holocaust, and here's slavery, and here's lactose. Are you tolerant?
The shop just sells cheese.
Yeah, one door says cheese, one says cheese. Not cheese.
I like the idea that we were talking about before of the bathrooms, and you know how like clever bars will be like cowboys and cowgirls, yeah. It'd be like racists and racettes. Like,
great gift shop at that museum, by the way. Great gift shop.
Does that still exist?
Oh, yeah, it's still there. We should go on a field trip.
Oh, my God.
I got to show you these doors, man. They're wild.
See this, man.
I need a picture of me standing in front of them.
What's funny about that museum is, like, you go in not being racist.
Right. Then you come out.
You leave, you are intolerant.
That is kind of what my problem was.
Remember
when
they're training,
like,
you to do?
Yeah, they're like conditioning you, like, by the way, you do hate black people.
You weren't,
like,
prejudiced before, but you are now.
Really?
That is weird.
Interesting.
Wow, shit, counterintuitive. Yeah.
So, Jess, before we get out of here, where can people watch Tonight in San Diego? Of course, it's got to be local.
Yes, it is local. It's on KSDY Channel 50, which you get if you have AT&T UVerse or Rabbit Ears antennas.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, we were on CW. Six for a while, but that got absorbed by another station.
Aha! Telecommunications Act! Telecommunications Act!
So that got taken into the Walmart.com or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're still trying to shop it to other places, but most of the time you can see a lot of the clips on YouTube, which is Tonight in San Diego, and on Facebook, Tonight in San Diego. So,
and where can people find you on social media if they want to follow you?
I am on Twitter at Jesse_San. On Twitter, yeah. And I'm on Instagram, Jesse Egan Comedy. So check me out. I got a website, which is, I think, jesseegan.net.
I do that thing where I never check my website. Yeah, I mean, is it still up?
Yeah. What I hate is it's got old videos, right, you know, but you know, I got to update it. It's just like there's so much Tonight in San Diego crap. I'm not sure what to put on there, but.
Well, anyway. Thank you so much for being on the show,
Thanks,
man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely.
I'm a huge fan of this podcast. Woo! I only had two questions before we go.
Yeah.
Really quick. The beginning, where you sing the theme song. What the hell are you saying? Just another day.
Oh, that's the Gore Horseman, okay. And it's just another day in my dead end profession.
Dead end profession. Yep. Thank you. I've been singing along, and
I'm curious what you thought
it
was.
I thought it was den. Just another day in my den. And I'm like,
that makes him seem way richer.
Yeah, that makes no sense. And then cruising with the twos means?
Oh, you know what? That is me making fun of people with a catchphrase.
Okay.
Because people were like, were starting to really push their catchphrase a while back. I'm like, look at these fucking idiotic catchphrases. So I have this weird thing where I like to kill time by just researching weird shit. Okay. So I'll be like, whatever happened to the guy who played Sloth in the Goonies? I want to find that out. And that I was researching that. I'm like, let's see. This guy's name is John Matuszak. He was a football player on the Raiders. He got kicked off for beating up his coach and doing cocaine. Then he did the Goonies, and then he died of cocaine. Wow. But before he did, he wrote a book called Cruising with the Twos.
Oh,
and that
wow.
fucking title, I'm like, I just went, he wrote an autobiography after playing a little ball and then doing one movie, and he called it Cruising with the Twos. I'm like, that's the catchphrase. I just started putting on at the end of everything to make fun of people with the catchphrase.
Yeah.
And then it fucking caught on. And then people started saying it back to me. And people started like commenting that on my shit. I'm like, it's like my Hot, Hot, Hot by like Buster Poindexter. He was doing it tongue in cheek. They're like, that's your hit. Like, ah.
It's your get her done.
Now it's the bane of my existence.
Oh my God. That's your modern day Goonie.
That's right.
I like it.
Goonies never die.
Well.
Anyway, I'm Ryan for Jesse, Dave, and Bobby saying, see you next week, Cruising with the Twos.
I'm not racist, but I do have to shit.
Oh, yeah, time passing by. Oh, that time passing by. Oh, motherfucking time is passing by.
I'm a low-level comic.